almost no one raises the real issue of tax avoidance, right? And of the rich just not paying their fair share. I mean, it feels like I'm at a firefighters conference and no one's allowed to speak about water.
Today we walk into this house with an iconic South African plant, the Aloe Ferox. We must take the bitter with the sweet.
It is a matter that is under consideration. And all I would say is that watch this space.
Welcome to this week's episode of the SA Money Report. This financial podcast is brought to you by Fin24 and hosted by Deputy Editor Ahmed Arif.
On October 11th, 77 days after most Africans last spent their nights in total darkness, Eskom announced that it would be implementing Stage 2 load shedding for the whole of the coming week. Before COVID-19, the state-owned power utility, which is slowly attempting to claw its way out of a 401.8 billion rand hole of debt, was often labelled as the single largest threat to the South African economy. This latest round of load shedding, which is scheduled to end on Thursday, is due to issues or breakdowns of units at its Tutuka, Kusile, Komati and Hendrina power stations. The combined plant outage apparently adds up to just under half of Eskom's coal power station fleet. While Eskom's woes are localized and specific to South Africa, the backdrop is what's been described as a global energy crisis. While some incidents are interrelated, others are merely coincidences, products of natural events, or possibly a result of foreign policy. Regardless, there's been a surge in prices for oil, natural gas and coal, causing a domino effect in numerous countries. But helping us to unpack the different facets of South Africa's ongoing energy saga is Fin24's Lemiz Umurji. Hi Lemiz, so let's start locally and work our way up. Firstly, last Friday, the day after load shedding kicked in, there was some big public disagreement between the ANC in Joburg and Eskom about a deal to supply power to certain Gauteng suburbs. What's the beef? And is something deeper happening here? Also, does it mean no more load shedding for Gauteng?
So last week, the ANC's Johannesburg branch issued a statement indicating that there was a power purchase agreement between City Power and Eskom. And this would mean that City Power would take over some of the areas that Eskom supplies power to. And these include Soweto, Orange Farm, and Ivory Park. And as the ANC put it, these areas have been experiencing unreliable power supply. We do know that Eskom has been implementing load reduction in Soweto, and that's not load shedding, but it's basically planned outages to sort of ease the burden on the electricity infrastructure, which is already strained due to things like vandalism or illegal connections. So after the ANC had put out that statement, Eskom immediately refuted it and said that the parties didn't enter into a purchase power agreement, but rather a memorandum of understanding. And they're basically still in talks about a business case for the possible transfer. And there's a number of details that still need to be ironed out, like, for example, what debt City Power might take over or the assets involved. And also, such a transfer would also require a public participation process run by the regulator, NERSA. Again, Eskom CEO Andre De Reiter actually told ENCA this week that such a transfer is something that they would support just because it sort of links political accountability and operational accountability, and that could potentially improve payment levels when it comes to electricity bills. But again, he stressed that they still need to go through the due diligence processes. And not to jump to conclusions, but we are in election season. And, you know, I guess politicians and not just the ANC are pulling out all the stops to secure votes and saying that there will be reliable electricity supply for voters battling with power interruptions, I think makes sense during election season. As to whether there is no load shedding for Gauteng, there is actually an power purchase agreement that the city signed with Kelvin coal-fired power plant. This is in the east of Joburg. The city already has a 20-year power purchase agreement with Kelvin, but that's coming to an end in November. And so they've sort of signed a new one for 2 years. And They are going to procure additional capacity, so about 180 megawatts compared to 80 megawatts previously. And the aim is basically to offset load shedding so that they can spare Joburg residents of harsher levels of load shedding. It sort of operates in the same way as when the city of Cape Town relies on the Steenbras hydropower station when load shedding kicks in. So if there's stage two load shedding in the country, sometimes City of Cape Town customers will only experience stage one load shedding because they're drawing on that capacity from Steenbras. I think it's remained to be seen if Kelvin would have that same effect. We just need to remember it's also a coal-fired power plant. It's pretty old. It's supposed to be decommissioned from 2026 onwards. Energy expert Chris Yelland said it's not really operating efficiently. And it's not like Steenbras, you know, which can ramp up and down fairly quickly. Coal-fired power plants take longer to do those things.
So talking about load shedding, it seems like parts of Joburg went dark and then stayed that way for a long time, way longer than they were meant to. What do we know about these outages?
So different parts of Gauteng, like the west of Joburg, the east, and some parts of Tshwane, were experiencing extended outages after load shedding. The city of Tshwane issued a statement indicating that load shedding was causing the electricity infrastructure to trip, especially when power is restored. There's often a surge that takes place, and both the city of Tshwane and City Power in Joburg have urged customers to unplug their electronics and things like geysers so that when power is restored, the system does not trip. City Power spokesperson Isaac Mangena said there was an added challenge of a vandalized mini substation and cable theft, which sort of contributed to Joburg's electricity system failures. Apparently, when there is load shedding, there is a greater chance for theft and vandalism of electricity infrastructure. City Power is also working with constrained resources. About 40% of substations need to be turned on and off manually. And some of the same teams have to tend to explosions. So they're really constrained. But the city's trying to mitigate against these things by replacing copper cables with aluminium cables or installing protective structures around mini substations and deploying intelligence to monitor potential cable theft. City Power is also working with constrained resources. About 40% of substations need to be turned on and off manually, and the same teams have to tend to explosions, so they really are constrained. There also was a huge storm which created service backlogs, and while the city was still, you know, tending to those queries, load shedding hit, and that created further challenges.
Moving on to what I've dubbed the coal war. Most of us agree that coal is a major hindrance to our ambitions to combat climate change. Why is Energy Minister Gwede Mantashe seemingly infatuated by it still?
I think you will have to ask the minister himself why he is pro-coal. But I think the argument we often get is that we have this vast resource in the ground and we have to use it. The minister has also previously spoken about including coal in the integrated resources plan just so that we can test clean coal technologies. Another argument is that we need to take this transition on a step-by-step basis. We can't just switch off coal or the use of coal and then move to renewables. And to be fair to the minister, some researchers in the field have said the same thing, that the transition will take time. And that's why all this work is going into developing a just transition, because there will be socioeconomic impacts of moving away from an electricity system dominated by fossil fuels to one with renewables. If we shift to renewables, we can't let that create more poverty and unemployment. The minister has also previously said that we can't completely exclude fossil fuels from the energy mix. And I think that's also where gas comes in. A lot of environmental activists are not big on gas, but for now we don't have battery storage or other sorts of green fuels that we can rely on to compensate for when renewables fall short of generating power. And that will generally happen when the wind doesn't blow, the sun doesn't shine.
There's been some criticisms about around the stance of clean coal. What are other major players, including Eskom, which has been dubbed the biggest polluting power company in the world, saying about coal?
Generally, there is a view by industry players, including Sasol, that clean coal technology, which you've probably heard of carbon capture technology, involves capturing carbon emissions in the atmosphere and then transporting it underground. This technology is very expensive and not economically viable. In fact, Dr. Crispian Olver of the Presidential Climate Change Commission, who was speaking at the Wind Energy Conference, Windaba, which took place last week, was quite frank in his comments that clean coal is a fantasy, you know, and was probably something that decision makers were relying on to help them come to terms with this transition to renewables. And again, he put forward that it's not something that is economically viable. From Eskom's point of view, they are not opposed to renewables. In fact, they want to go big with renewables and clean energy generation. And the Eskom's head of the Just Energy Transition Office, Mandy Rambaros, has also publicly said we should not be investing more in fossil fuels. But in the meantime, we are going to have to rely on natural gas until we have options like green hydrogen or battery storage. Eskom actually is trying to procure battery storage through a project sponsored by the World Bank. So they're also not sitting on their hands and, you know, waiting for it to happen. But, you know, that sort of process could take about 10 to 15 years, according to the CEO, Andre de Reta.
It seems Matasha's views have put him on a collision course with other ministers that were apparently wooing envoys from the US, UK, France and European Union 2 weeks ago, basically for 76 billion rand to help South Africa transition away from coal. I mean, you have Mantashe then saying we must not collapse our economy because we are greedy for green funding. I mean, how important is it that we get enough green funding and what will it help us achieve?
It's great that Eskom has plans to go green, but it doesn't have the capital to just spend on new projects. It needs to sort out its debt problem and it needs to decommission old power stations, and that costs money. And for now, it appears that getting climate finance is a solution. They could possibly get loans on a concessionary basis and or on a condition that, for example, if they get funding, then they would in turn decommission coal-fired power plants. And that's just the kind of ideas we've heard being put forward over the years. Most recently, the Deputy Finance Minister, David Masondo, also put forward, you know, having our sovereign debt forgiven of about 146 billion. In exchange, then government could use the capital it has to, you know, sort of help Eskom go green or help Eskom decommission coal-fired power plants. So there are a lot of ideas going about. Another big thing is, you know, as an example, with this meeting with these envoys, is that developed nations need to help developing nations decarbonize, just because the richer nations were the ones responsible for emissions historically. And I think there is a lot of attention for all this work of reducing emissions on Eskom, just because our electricity sector is sort of really mostly responsible for our emissions because it is based on coal-fired power generation.
Lastly, Lamise, this is all happening amid a global energy crisis. Without going into too much detail, what's happening here, especially with big global players like China, and what's the knock-on effect?
So we've generally seen surges in energy prices globally. For example, oil pushed past $80 a barrel this week, and apparently it's at its highest levels in 3 years already. China, they have an issue with coal supply because 60 out of, I think, 682 coal mines were closed due to flooding. And this is sort of responsible for 30% of its fuel supply for a year. And so I guess the lack of coal supply there is also driving up prices. And again, on India's side, they're also running low on coal supplies. And I guess all this shows me, it's sort of comforting to know, in a dark way, that South Africa is not the only place with power supply problems. And like the whole world is sort of navigating its way through it.
Thanks, Lamise. This brings our show to an end. The music in this episode is courtesy of Getty Images and Epidemic Sound. This week's installment was produced with the help of Nomvelo Chalumbira. Thank you for listening.